And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you, right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. In today's society, we pride ourselves for valuing empathy and compassion. While we may fall short in practice, we do aspire to extend these values to our fellow humans, and most of us aspire to live in a world where there is equality and justice for all. How is it, though, that we often do not apply these same feelings that we value to our interactions with the non-human animals with whom we share this planet? And this question is especially noteworthy on the eve of Thanksgiving and other holidays, where the center of the celebratory meal is often another animal who ended up there against its will. Not a cat or a dog, but a turkey. Fact, we truly love our dogs and cats and other animals that we live with as family members. And when I say that, I know that thousands of you are out there feeling this love and thinking about your animal and their fur and the way they interact with you. And it gives us peace. It gives us warmth. It gives us connection. I could go on for a long time talking about the lovable characteristics of my cat, and I know that you can do the same. And yet somehow, many are able to turn a blind eye to the suffering of billions of other animals, raised solely to satisfy our taste buds and to fulfill our expectations of various traditions. We are animal lovers who celebrate holidays with feasts of turkeys and pigs and lambs and goats and whatever else, somehow ignoring how these intelligent and feeling creatures participated or did not participate in getting onto our plates. And that creates something called cognitive dissonance. Now, you may remember that term from your psychology courses long ago, but basically, cognitive dissonance is when our actions are out of sync with our values. And those internal contradictions can take a toll on us and be distressing, even if we don't know it or admit it. We love animals, and yet we happily eat animals, even though doing so is entirely unnecessary for our health or survival. The disconnect between our values and actions also raises important questions about our society's overall understanding of compassion. How can we be a compassionate society while continuing to inflict harm on those animals we know are innocent and who we would likely admire and even love, dare I say that, if we knew them? Today, we'll delve into these questions with a leading voice for the truly humane treatment of animals, Hope Bohanic. I will also say this is a show for any of you, all of you, regardless of how you currently eat. The point is not to judge or condemn who we are, but to raise the questions that need to be raised as we collectively choose a path forward. And if you feel discomfort listening to this topic and hearing about what I've said so far, that in itself could be cognitive dissonance, a discomfort that comes because there needs to be a connection between what we think, what we feel, and our actions. We're going to examine the disconnect between the values and actions, and Hope is also going to talk about the myths surrounding items such as happy meat, humane slaughter, humane dairy, cage-free eggs, all that, things you want to know because it can impact your buying decisions. We'll also discuss who the animals we're eating are versus the stereotypes that we hold about them. We'll also touch upon the impact of our food choices on animals and the environment, and explore alternative ways to celebrate holidays and enjoy food without creating discomfort in our minds and hearts. And as I mentioned, to help navigate this really interesting topic, I'm very happy to be joined by Hope Bohanic. Hope has been active in animal protection and environmental activism for over 30 years. She's the executive director of Compassionate Living and the host of the Hope for Animals podcast. Hope co-founded the Humane Hoax Project, the Ahimsa Living Project. She also published two books on the subject of greenwashing and humane washing. One of them is The Ultimate Betrayal, Is There Happy Meat? And the other book is The Humane Hoax, Essays Exposing the Myth of Happy Meat, Humane Dairy, and Ethical Eggs. Over the last three decades, she's worked for national nonprofits, including the United Poultry Concerns, and in defense of animals, and contributed chapters to two anthologies. Hope Bohanic, thank you so much for joining us on the Healthy Planet radio show and for all the work that you've done over so many years.
Thank you, Bob. It's great to be here.
Hope you heard my introduction where I touched briefly on a slew of thoughts related to the holidays, cognitive dissonance, traditions. And since we're smack in the holiday season now, let's start talking about Thanksgiving, where, of course, it's common practice to serve and eat a turkey at the center of that celebration meal. Many of us think about holiday traditions as positive, warm, cozy events. They keep us connected to our heritage, to our parents, to our grandparents. We could have love associated with those events. But really, there's another side that we need to be examining. As we are an evolving and maturing society, hopefully, it stands to reason that some traditions will necessarily be outgrown. Animal sacrifices, stoning adulterers, burning witches, child's marriages, public hangings. They were traditions at some point, but today we look at them as archaic and cruel and bizarre. We think we would never do such things. However, it's much easier to look in the rearview mirror and say that was weird and bizarre and violent and terrible than it is to look at where we are today and ask ourselves, what is it we're doing that no longer fits who we aspire to be? So, Hope, I'm going to ask you to give our audience first your thoughts on traditions in general, and more specifically, about what you think about the many traditions that we practice today surrounding the slaughter of animals being part of that tradition, especially on the holidays.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. The holidays bring up so much emotion for a lot of us, and traditions are a big part of that. And traditions, you know, they can be very important to a society, to a community. They shape us. They can make us stronger and more connected. They can stabilize societies. So they have their place, absolutely. But as every generation comes through, you know, we need to evaluate our parents and our grandparents' traditions and our history, and scrutinize, you know, and make sure that these are ethical behaviors and that there's not moral flaws in these traditions, right? Just as you mentioned, numerous ones that we've had in the past that we've let go of. And really throughout history, many traditions that were once considered natural and normal for many generations, we have eventually deemed that they're, you know, kind of outdated or cruel or simply no longer necessary. And when we find a tradition that has proven to damage our health, our spirit, our community in some way, we let go of it. And interestingly, some traditions that we think are really old, like that are hundreds of years old, like the engagement ring, giving an engagement ring to a betrothed for a wedding, you know, I think people think, oh, well, that's hundreds of years old, right? Well, actually, that tradition only started in 1938, less than 100 years ago. So that's actually a very new tradition. It was instated by a diamond company that wanted to sell rings. But then other traditions that are very old, you know, like a family negotiating a daughter's dowry, right? That's very old. That is hundreds and hundreds of years old. We have now recognized in a modern society that that is demeaning to women and that she has the right to choose her own spouse and her own destiny, right? And that is old fashioned. So we've let it die off, rightly so. And so, my point is that, you know, traditions, even though we think they're so steadfast and so unchanging, that's not necessarily true. They're more malleable than we believe. And, you know, traditions come and go. And the tradition that we really need to scrutinize today, of course, is the killing of billions of farmed animals. And this is particularly poignant this month and this season with Thanksgiving and Christmas. We have, you know, just massive amounts of animals that are violently killed for this time of year. And so we really have to kind of look at this tradition and say, is this benefiting us? Is this benefiting society? Is this benefiting our community? And when we break it down, no, it's damaging our health. It is hurting others, the turkeys themselves. It's not good for the environment. It's bad for our planet. So this is a tradition that we've really got to examine and look into changing.
It's so important because, again, there is a feeling of solidity in traditions.
Yeah.
They are our connection. They are a flow. They are a continuous thing. But I could have been born not too long ago in the United States and would have been like, Grandpa had slaves. Really? Mom can't vote. Really?
Yeah.
Mom can't vote. So they're not solid. That's probably one of the most important things people can take away from this is that what we're given in the past need not continue into the future. And of course, with issues such as this, it's important that we let them go, not only for the reasons that we've mentioned in terms of compassion to the animals, but for our very survival, for the sustainability of our ecosystem. But we'll talk a little bit more about that in the next few minutes. So Hope, stereotypes are much easier to hold on to when we don't know the individuals that we have those stereotypes about. So stereotypes about turkeys, as you well know, and I hate to say it, one is that they're stupid animals. So talk about who turkeys actually are. I think most people on Long Island haven't really met them. Are they intelligent? How do they interact with their families and other turkeys? What are their personalities like? Do they have personalities? And anything else you can tell us that will help our audience to get a more accurate picture of these beautiful animals that could perhaps help with the stereotypes that they're currently holding.
Yeah, absolutely. Turkeys are really amazing birds. They're incredible. I met turkeys for the first time in my early 20s when I was interning I was volunteering, doing an internship at a farm sanctuary where they rescue animals and let them live their lives out in peace. And when I first met the turkeys, I was coming out to the yard to, I can't remember what I was doing some kind of activity. And I just thought they were so amazing to look at. They're big, much bigger than I think people realize, especially the farmed birds, because they have been genetically manipulated to be so big. And Just beautiful. And so I sat down just to watch them, sat kind of cross-legged on the ground. And one of the turkeys, she came right up to me and plopped down in my lap. I couldn't believe it. I was just like a dog or a cat would come up and just plop in your lap. And I started stroking her feathers and she was responding to that, just loving the touch and the attention. And I was just amazed that she was so sweet and so connecting, like wanting to connect with me. They're just incredible, incredible animals. People don't realize that they have this skin around their face called the snood and wattle, and it changes colors, can change from red to blues and purples. And it's actually an indicator of their mood. When they're more relaxed, it goes into the blues and purples. When they're more alert and kind of aware and you know, unsure of something or an agitation, it turns more red, that coloring around their face. It's like a mood ring.
That's beautiful too.
Yeah, so gorgeous. Yeah. Just amazing to see. Turkeys can fly. They've been clocked at 50 miles an hour. They do fly. People don't realize that. They can run up to 12 miles an hour. They're very fast. Mm. And they're also good swimmers. They love to swim. They can swim for good distances. So just incredible creatures. I love turkeys so much. What's been done to them over the years, the history is really, really, it's very, very sad.
Please talk more about the history of turkeys in the United States and where they came from.
Yeah, another thing that people don't realize is that turkeys are native to the United States. They're one of the only animals that we eat today that is actually native to the Americas, the US, Canada, Mexico. There were turkeys everywhere, millions and millions of turkeys. When the Europeans first came in the 16th and 17th centuries, you just found turkeys everywhere. Turkeys they can live anywhere. They can live on the plains. They can live in the mountains, in the forests. They were everywhere in this country. And the Europeans, unfortunately, brought muskets and other firearms that this world had never seen before. And they really loved to kill the turkeys, and especially when they would roost in the trees at night. So turkeys like to roost up in tree branches in the trees at night, and they go up there at dusk, sleep through the night, and then come back down from the trees at dawn for protection. Is why they go up there, and they just love to roost up in trees. And actually, they can go very high in the trees. I used to live in Pengrove, a small town in Sonoma County, and the turkeys would roost really high up in the trees. It was amazing to watch them fly up and how high they would roost in the trees. So they do that naturally. And unfortunately, through the history of this country, when the Europeans came, they killed millions and millions and millions of birds. They would just kill them sometimes by the hundreds at a time, and not for eating, just for sport, and leave dead turkeys, you know, on the ground. And we still see turkey shoots today being conducted in some rural areas. So that still continues, unfortunately, not on the scale that it was in the past. But the turkey was almost wiped out by the late 19th, early 20th century from all of this killing. And of course, that's when humans started to farm turkeys, to confine them, keep them on their properties and farm them. And that's what has turned into the genetically bred monstrosity of the turkey that we have today, who is very, very different from their wild turkey ancestors, excessively heavy and just very, very different. But it's kind of a sad history that we now have millions of turkeys again, but they're not the same turkeys of the wild turkeys that roamed all those years ago. They're a very, very different manipulated turkey, really bred to be so, so heavy in their bodies. And we can talk about that more, but you know, it's sad to think that there were millions of wild turkeys living free, roaming lives, and that has now evolved and turned into the millions of farmed birds that are tortured, not only in their bodies because of how we've bred them, but also in the way that we keep them. So, yeah.
Let's go into that some then. Talk about how the turkeys that people have on their plates and see as delicious centerpieces, talk about how they're raised for food and the cruelties that are specific to that species that would make most people cringe, I think it's safe to say, and would cause many people to reconsider automatically just eating them for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yeah. There are 47 million turkeys that are killed just for November and December in the United States. So many birds, it's really hard to wrap your brain around. The turkeys, they're packed into these long windowless buildings by the thousands. And it's very much like chickens that are bred for their meat. Turkeys are in these overcrowded floor systems. Often they don't even have windows, can't even see outside. They're forced to live in their own waste. They're breathing the ammonia fumes from that waste, irritating dust. When you walk into these buildings, and I have seen these buildings, it's just packed with, you know, air particulates, and it stinks, and it's a horrible, horrible place to be. And they have to be there their whole short lives. They can develop respiratory diseases, ulcerated feet, ammonia burning in their eyes and their throats. I mean, they're just dirty, horrible places to be. And these turkeys have been bred to grow so fast, so quickly, and become so heavy that sometimes their bones are too weak to support their weight. There's this forced, rapid growth that they have been genetically bred to do, and it breaks their bones. They have leg deformities, arthritis, joint pain. This is just in the first few months of their lives. They can sometimes have lameness so severe that they can't walk to reach food and water. They can have congestive heart and lung diseases, enlarged diseased livers. I mean, these birds are just lame and sick and in pain. It's horrible to see. Turkeys can live to be 20 years old. That's their natural, you know, about that is their natural lifespan. But these turkeys that are destined for the dinner table, they don't see their first birthday. They're killed at about 5 months old, sometimes as young as 12 weeks, some anywhere between 12 weeks and 5 months, they are sent to slaughter. And, you know, and this is something that I think people just don't realize, you know, when you're talking about these birds, they're so young. They're just very, very, very young. They don't get to see a whole year of life. And sitting here looking out my window and seeing the change of the seasons, you know, right now with autumn coming and all the color changes and pattern changes, and it's just such a beautiful thing to experience. And these birds that are so connected to nature and so connected to the earth, they don't have those experiences at all. They're not in nature. They're not able to see the changes of the seasons and the earth that they love. And, you know, they never get to see an entire year of season. It's just tragic. And two things that are very specific to turkeys that no other farmed animals experience. One is detoeing. So all birds that are raised for their meat, chickens and turkeys, are debeaked. They'll cut off a portion, a sizable portion of their beak gets burned off when they're just chicks. It's very painful. And of course, chickens and turkeys use their beaks to preen, to groom, to peck, and to eat, just to explore their environment and their world. And when that beak is cut off, it can cause lifelong pain and suffering. But turkeys also are detoed. And this is when they cut a portion of their toes off, completely cutting like the first and second digit of their toes off. And this is because when turkeys are stressed or afraid, they will use their talons, their thick nails that are on their toes, their talons, to defend themselves. And because they are overcrowded, they're brutally handled by the workers, they will use their talons to defend themselves. And so they cut their talons off. And to do that, they actually cut their toes with just crude implements. Sometimes it's like gardening shears or scissors, and they will just cut off a portion of their toe. It's incredibly painful. The wound will sometimes get infected. They swell up. It makes them just incredibly painful for them to walk. And this detoeing goes on even in free range operations, even in pasture raised. The turkeys are still debeaked and detoed no matter the label on the meat. This is standard procedure. And it's awful. The other thing that turkeys endure that is unique to them as birds, chickens can be kept co-ed, both genders together, and there are breeding flocks where the chickens are kept, where there's one rooster and about, you know, 10 or 20 hens, you know, per rooster, and they breed naturally. It's not that way for turkeys. Turkeys have been bred to be so overweight, so huge, especially in the breast area, that they cannot breed naturally anymore. The males would just crush the females. So they have to be kept separate. The genders have to be kept separate. Male turkeys and female turkeys never see each other their entire short lives. And what they have to do is artificial insemination. Now, artificial insemination is very common with cows and pigs, but not with chickens. But with turkeys, they do have to do these very invasive procedures where they will actually turn the birds upside down. The male birds are manipulated. We'll say that word. There's another M word that is actually what's going on, but we won't say that on the radio. But they extract the semen from the male birds, and then they take that semen into the females. Again, she is flipped upside down. It's this very disorienting and horrible procedure. The birds are fighting and don't know what's going on. And they insert the semen into the female, and that's how they breed them. But it's so invasive and so, I'm sure, scary and you know, disorienting for the birds. And just so strange that we have to do this, right? That this is how we have to raise our food. What? Mm-hmm. It's just very bizarre, right? And not
appetizing.
No, definitely not, right?
Yeah. At the basis of all this, what makes this especially important is understanding, as we've mentioned before, that they are intelligent creatures and that they have feelings. Have you had a paper cut? Have you had the flu? Have you had a sickness or perhaps an issue where you needed surgery? You've been attended to. You've paid attention to it. You've suffered through it, but you've gotten care. These turkeys do not get that care that you got. They just live with this suffering. And the suffering is as acute, and you could even argue that it's more acute in an animal such as this, because that's all they have. They have their experience being crowded in a place that they don't want to be, in a place that's not natural to them, and they're suffering with all of these horrible things that we do to them just to get a few minutes of pleasure when we sit down on Thanksgiving and put that into our mouths. And then the event, the holiday is done, the event is done, and it is no longer having an impact on our lives. But look at what we caused to get there. So this is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. We're talking to Hope Bohanek, the Executive Director of Compassionate Living, the host of the Hope for the Animals podcast, and author of two books on the subject of greenwashing and humane washing. You can find out more about Hope and her work at Compassionate Living at www.compassionate-living.org. That's compassionate-living.org. So I just mentioned about how intelligent turkeys are, and I'd like you to say a little bit more about that, as well as talking about the family lives of turkeys. How do they relate to their families? And describe how their natural family interactions are disrupted by modern production methods.
Yeah, it's so frustrating to me when I hear people say that turkeys and chickens are, you know, not intelligent or that they're dumb. It's so untrue. Chickens and turkeys both are so intelligent, and they have, you know, when we think about intelligence, we often think very human-oriented, right? We have a very human-centered feeling about intelligence. But these birds, turkeys in particular, they are very smart. They have ancestral knowledge that's, you know, evolved over centuries. They've got personal experience that keeps them alive and safe. And their world is, you know, very, very complex. And they have to be very intelligent to navigate their world. And the maternal knowledge, I'm talking about their family life, turkey mothers really demonstrate an incredible intelligence. They're wonderful mothers. Turkeys are ground nesting birds, just like chickens. Chickens and turkeys nest on the ground. They don't nest in trees. So they have to be very careful, right? They have to pick places that are secluded and camouflaged and are near water to protect the eggs, to protect themselves as they're sitting on their eggs. And turkey mothers actually communicate with their babies while they're still in the eggs, while they're still in embryo stage. They are able to vocalize. They can coo and cluck. They talk to each other. The eggs and the babies that are in the eggs and the mother turkey, it's such an amazing thing. The little babies can tell the mom if they're cold, if they need more warmth. It's such an incredible experience that, by the way, is completely denied in farming turkeys, because they are not hatched with their mothers. But so when these babies are born, the wild turkeys are born, the mother teaches little turkey poults, and that's what they're called. The babies are called poults. So that she teaches the little poults how to survive and where to find food and, you know, how to live. And when one of the little turkeys inevitably wanders off and gets kind of lost from the family, they put out what's called a lost call. And they just start, you know, really vocalizing and chirping loudly because they can't find their mom and they're scared, just like a kid in a store, you know. So they cry and the mother is frantically looking for the baby and calling to the baby. And finally, when they find each other, it's such relief, you know, the chick is reunited with the mom and the family and everyone's, whew, you know, very relieved. But in the hatcheries where chickens are now today hatched, they're not in a nest, a warm, loving nest with a mother hen. No, they're in a metal drawer. They are, you know, brought into this world in with, you know, metal machinery and just workers tossing them about. And when they're first born, they actually put off that lost call, that chirping, like calling out for their mother. They're trying to desperately find their mom, that she will never be able to respond. These chicks are orphans in these hatcheries. They'll never have the joy and comfort and security of a mother hen and siblings and family life. They're kind of in this constant state of feeling lost and alone. It's heartbreaking. I mean, these are very complex, intelligent, and emotionally complex beings, and we are denying them very basic essences of life, like family and love and comfort. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, the suffering they endure is pretty much hard for us to comprehend because it's so absurd and over the top. A very, very short life where there is only suffering and there are only conditions that are unnatural to them in every way.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
their whole lives. In addition to all the suffering that we mentioned, there are other downsides to raising so many of these animals, millions of them, for holiday dinners. And that is that they have a massive global environmental impact. Talk a bit about that.
We are seeing the direct result of climate disruption right now, everywhere on Earth. And it's become undeniable now, and very scary. I actually just moved out of California because the wildfires and the smoke were getting so bad that it was getting hard to live there. I mean, I am a climate refugee in that way, I guess you could say. It's really horrible that we are living like this.
We had our own episode of that out here from the Canadian fires.
Right. Just crazy, right?
Yeah.
So, and you know, for the first time ever this year, there was a poll in the U.S. that found that the majority of people in the U.S. feel that they are directly affected by climate change. So, you know, we're waking up to this. And the EPA, so many other sources, they are connecting and have been for decades, connecting animal agriculture and climate disruption, massive energy consumption, deforestation, you know, every kind of pollution and problem and habitat issue we have can be connected to animal agriculture and our meat, dairy, and eggs. So it's critical that we are reducing and eliminating these very, very impactful products. And of course, turkey, you know, is in that category, and is certainly raising of turkeys affects the climate and affects the water and the air pollution and soil degradation and so many things. It's hard to see that connection, but it's there. And, you know, we are seeing also greenwashing really heavily in the turkey meat that is being sold. You know, because people are waking up to these problems, we know, right? We know now that meat is very impactful on the environment. So we are waking up to these issues and we're concerned, and the industry knows that people are concerned. And so they are, you know, trying to appease consumers with greenwashing and, you know, the labels like free range and pasture raised and organic, all of these labels that kind of make you feel that, oh, okay, this was raised a little better. Something better is going on here. But some of these labels, it's just straight greenwashing. There is no significant change in the environmental impact, no change at all. In some situations, it can be slightly better in one area, but still be problematic in other areas. So these labels are just woefully unregulated. You really won't know the difference from one farm to another. Their website, their marketing can say whatever they want it to say. And just considering the size of the farm, I really wanted to emphasize this, that just because a farm is smaller doesn't really alter the situation that much often. The same amount of, for instance, the same amount of water needs to be used, right? So we're currently using 55% of our fresh water on farmed animals, on animals raised for food and the food that we feed those animals. 55% of our fresh water in the U.S. That wouldn't change just because it's a small farm, right? Just having the billions of farmed animals alive, no matter how they're raised, wastes just tons of resources and water, causes pollution. So the sustainable labels, we really have to scrutinize these. And even when you see a sustainable label, it doesn't necessarily mean that it came from a small farm. Butterball Turkey, they have the certified humane label on all of their turkey meat, and they are basically raising them practically the same as every other turkey.
So certified humane is not humane.
Right. Basically, just to get into that a little bit, I mean, I know Please. We're talking about the environment, but I think this is really important for people to know. The label is actually American Humane Certified. That's the label that Butterball Turkey uses. Butterball is the biggest producer, largest producer of turkey meat in the U.S. They produce 1 billion pounds of turkey flesh annually. And that regulation, the regulation on that label, the requirements are so lax that most of the practices, when they put those labels into place, most of the farms didn't even have to change, didn't even have to make any improvements in the facilities. They require that they have to have food and water, adequate food and water. Well, yeah, they're getting lots of food. They're fattening them up, right? So that didn't change. And they don't have to have access to the outside under this label. So they're still in windowless indoor buildings. The birds are still de-beaked and de-toed, as I talked about. And they're still bred to become painfully overweight. Nothing really changes. The only difference from a conventional operation and the American Humane Certified label is what they call the stocking density, or how crowded the birds are. And for every bird, they are required to have 1 square foot for every 7.88 pounds of bird. I know it's hard to kind of calculate, but the birds are often, about double that, maybe triple that. So they get like 2-3 square foot inches of space. And this is only slightly more space than the typical industry standard. So, I mean, yes, it's good that we're giving them more space, but it's hardly enough to warrant a humane label. Right. And when people are buying these humane labels, paying more for humane certified meat or free range, I think they think of something very different than what is going on. They don't think of the birds being crammed by the thousands into windowless buildings. It's humane washing. It's greenwashing. It's a cover up, unfortunately. I do want to talk about the free range label, because that is a label that you often see on turkey and turkey meat is free range. And that does not necessarily mean that the birds were outside, just so everyone knows. Again, these labels are unregulated. It's just the farmer's word, and no one goes out for, on-site inspections of the farm or anything like that. But let's say that a farmer is truly allowing the birds to be outside in pens outdoors. So now we have a situation where the same amount of animals, or often a smaller number of animals, are using several more acres of land, right? So free-ranging animals requires more land for the same amount or fewer animals. So as the demand for these alternative products starts to grow, we're going to see the need to use more land. And that requires you know, destroying prairies and wetlands and forests and cutting trees and other wild areas to accommodate these local free-range farms. So free-ranging animals actually increases the damage to biodiversity. It reduces the amount of green spaces and wild spaces that we have, and it requires fewer animals for more space. So free-ranging animals, it can't be scaled up, right, to feed the now 8 billion people on Earth. We just don't have enough land to do that. We would actually need closer to 5 planet Earths to be able to free range all the farmed animals that we have on the planet today. So there's just simply not enough space to accommodate this local free range diet that includes meat. Right. And there's also a kind of a dark side to free ranging animals outside, or this romanticized notion that we have of getting animals out onto pasture. There's this really kind of false sense that if we just can get the animals out of the confinement barns and out into open spaces and on pasture and in pens outdoors, that this will relieve a lot of the issues and solve some of the problems of animal farming. But that's really not the case. These are domesticated animals. They are not wild animals. And having hundreds or even thousands of animals in an outdoor pen, you're going to get a host of new problems. There's actually numerous studies that underscore just the myriad of problems with free-ranging animals, putting animals out onto pasture. In harsh weather, they cannot get out of the weather, like in heavy rains, freezing temperatures, cold wind, sleet, snow, you know, these outdoor operations. Again, these are domesticated animals. They're not used to being out in outdoor and in nature environments. They're not conditioned for that. And in nature, wild turkeys will seek out, you know, natural barriers to the bad weather, like trees or bushes or slopes in the terrain, and or they would get out of the mud. You know, I actually went to a free range chicken facility one time where it was just a big mud hole, you know. Chickens were just up to their feathers with mud, in mud. And, you know, so, and that's not how they would live. That's not what they would, you know, they would get out of the mud if they could. Also with free ranging, they're more vulnerable to predators. Predators will prey on these animals and they can't escape because they're caught in a pen. They have more contact with pathogens and parasites. They're often sick or more sick because when they're indoors, they're sick. And they're also more sick when they are out. An avian flu right now. We have this horrible situation with avian flu, and the birds being outside, you know, exacerbates that. So really, farming these birds, no matter how it's done, no matter what label, it just doesn't provide for the birds' complex needs. It doesn't provide for their range of emotions and their, you know, needs. The result really is just a miserable short life. It's also worse for the environment, like I was saying, you know, when you take into account the land use and deforestation. So, you know, this romanticized notion of free-ranging animals, we've really got to look at the reality of it.
And often when calculations are made about the environmental impact of these outdoor farm facilities, they don't take into account the lands that's being used that would otherwise go back to nature. And that's a big omission, because that changes everything when you consider how much of the world's land is actually being used to raise animals and also to raise food to feed to animals. It's just enormous.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's so important right now is rewilding, making spaces green again, right? Replanting forests, making areas more lush with bushes and green spaces. Rewilding is so important because, of course, that absorbs the carbon, that pulls carbon out of the atmosphere. And when you're talking about farming, especially free-range farming and local farming, then that's the opposite. That's diminishing and taking away green spaces. So it's kind of doing the opposite of what we need to be doing right now, which is rewilding.
Right, indeed. And it's unfortunate because a lot of people who are buying these quote unquote humane products are doing so because they care about the environmental impacts. They're willing to spend more. They care about the animals and how they're treated. And they're actually putting down more money and not creating the outcome that they're supposed to get in return for their money. And that, of course, caused you to create the Humane Hoax book and now the anthology called The Humane Hoax, Essays Exposing the Myth of Happy Meat, Humane Dairy, and Ethical Eggs. So you've been on this message for quite a while.
Yeah. I wrote the first book on humane washing called The Ultimate Betrayal 10 years ago. And now this is a follow-up book, an anthology with 18 contributing authors, all coming at this issue from different angles, academics and activists and people that rescue animals directly from these humane and free-range farms. And, you know, it's really interesting because I think that while I'm concerned about humane washing and this issue, it's also hopeful because people do care, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, these labels wouldn't exist if people didn't care. They are concerned about what's happening. They're concerned when they hear that there's cruelty, that there is brutality happening to these animals, and they want animals to be treated well. So that is the hopeful part of it. But the problem is that the industry, you know, they want to make money. They don't want to change their practices. And so they're going to tell a story that is going to appease the consumers, right? In the labeling, in the marketing, on the websites. And that's where we get the humane hoax. It's an interesting subject. You know, just a quick definition of what it is. It's this kind of new labeling and marketing on animal products that we're seeing that conveys a false sense that there's some improvement in the industry, right? Either ethically or environmentally. And when really overall there is not an improvement, when we look at the larger picture of animal farming, it's just getting worse, really, for animals. But because these labels are out there, people have this false sense that things are getting better. And these labels are unregulated. They largely mean very little. In some instances, things can be slightly better, but in others, they can be actually even worse with these labels. And, you know, it's really farm by farm. I did a lot of investigation myself going on to these farms, looking into it myself. And you get a sense that these labels mean so little. To produce a profitable product, the well-being of the animal just has to be compromised in fundamental ways, no matter how humane an operation wants to be, right? There's these inherent cruelties that are just universal to making a product profitable. Body mutilations like dehorning and debeaking and detowing, like we were talking about. These things, you know, can't change unless there is massive overhaul of the entire system, which they just can't afford to do. There's separation of families, like we were talking about with the baby turkeys. They can't have a family unit and allow the chickens and the turkeys to sit on nests. It just, you know, it there's no way they could make money. So they have to have these body mutilations, separation of families, slaughter at a very young age. They can't allow them to live their lives, even a portion of their lives, and make a profit. So, you know, it's really, a frustrating thing for me to see, because they're really just lying, and people should look into it themselves, really learn the truth behind these labels, because there's just no right way to do the wrong thing and to commodify and confine and kill animals. We just don't need to. It's unnecessary, and you know, we can live healthier and happier without that.
Yes, indeed. Hope, I'll tell you that if I hadn't stopped eating turkey 45 years ago, after hearing what you're saying now and explaining all of this, I would be stopping now. And that leads us to the next question. If people are listening to this show and they are reconsidering their holiday traditions, do you have any tips for them?
Yeah, you know, I long for the day when people look back, and I believe this day will come, when people look back and say, how on earth could a tortured dead bird in the middle of the dining room table ever have been a symbol of gratitude and family? How does this make sense? Right? I really implore everyone to be on the compassionate side of history, because this is the direction that we're going. We're learning that these birds are intelligent and complex and emotional. And we're learning that we can do things better. We can have a better way to show our gratitude and our love and you know, change this cruel, outdated tradition. So I really want us to evolve the Thanksgiving tradition to a new one of kindness and resolve not to shed blood in the name of a holiday celebration. We can still honor the turkey. I love images of turkeys and depicting celebrating turkeys. I think that can, you know, stay and be part of the tradition. But let's truly honor her and not kill her. We can start the new tradition by hosting a vegan Thanksgiving dinner with family and friends. We could have it be just an intimate gathering with close friends or family, or even a large community potluck. Many areas have vegan community gatherings for Thanksgiving. You can look into that and see if you have one in your area so you can be with like-minded people. You know, however we decide to celebrate our gratitude, I hope we can be brave and forward-thinking enough to initiate a new tradition of compassion. There's numerous vegan options for holiday centerpieces. There's the tofurkey roast, and let's see, Field Roast has one. I think it's called the Celebration Roast. Trader Joe's has one. You can also stuff a pumpkin, you know, make the vegan stuffing and hollow out a pumpkin and stuff a pumpkin and cook it, or any large squash that can make a beautiful centerpiece. All the traditional side dishes can be made vegan very easily with non-dairy milks, plant-based alternatives. There's even vegan eggnog, and now we're kind of getting into December holidays, but I actually love it. I never really liked eggnog. It's kind of gross, but the vegan stuff is really delicious. So there's a lot of ways that we can evolve this tradition, make it more compassionate. Traditions, they should uplift and strengthen a community. And as long as a tradition causes suffering, hinders our health, hurts the environment, you know, I think that it really holds us all back. It makes it so the entire society or community isn't able to thrive to our highest capacity. So by practicing compassion, love, kindness, I think we can create a community and a holiday where we're creating something better, right? A better world for ourselves and for all species on earth, and especially this, you know, poignant time for the turkeys.
Exactly. And before we finally go, Hope, Karen Davis, one of our colleagues that has been in this movement for decades, she started the United Poultry Concerns, passed away recently. And I know that you worked with her. And if you would say a few words about her work and who she was.
Yeah, Karen was amazing. Karen Davis, she has been in this work for many years. She started United Poultry Concerns, a nonprofit focused entirely on chickens and turkeys and their plight, in 1990. It's so sad. It's a terrible loss that she died on November 4th. You know, she always advocated for the turkeys. UPC's focus would be entirely on the turkeys for November and December. She wrote a wonderful book that I encourage everyone to look into about turkeys. It's called More Than a Meal, The Turkey in Myth, Ritual, and Reality by Karen Davis. And, you know, she was really so powerful and knew so much, so knowledgeable about these birds. And she used to say something that I always felt was so amazing. She would talk about turkeys and chickens and their earth rights and how they had earth rights. And what she meant by that is that they have the right to exist on this earth free of human-imposed suffering, free of human-imposed manipulation. You know, they have the right to exist in a free state, running in the forest, roosting in the trees, doing what they do best, which is living a full, happy life as turkeys and as family units. She always talked about that, about birds having earth rights and how their earth rights were denied in animal farming. And she was a legend, and we should really honor her and remember her this time of year, and visit United Poultry Concern's website, because there's a lot of wonderful information there about turkeys and other birds.
Yeah, Karen has been on this show. She's spoken at our live events here on Long Island. She was a powerhouse, and she just didn't stop. So we'll miss you, Karen.
Yeah.
Hope, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us in this holiday season. This is the right time to be talking about all these issues. And of course, we look forward to having you back to enlighten our audience once again.
Thank you so much for having me, Bob, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, and to you too. And that'll do it for this evening's show. This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We've been talking to Hope Bohanic, the Executive Director of Compassionate Living, the host of the Hope for the Animals podcast, and author of two books on the subjects of greenwashing and humane washing. You can find out more about Hope and her work at Compassionate Living at www.compassionate-living.org. That's www.compassionate-living.org. And that does it for our show. I'll be with you again at this time on Friday, December 1st at 6 p.m. And every month thereafter at 6 p.m. on the first and third Fridays of the month. And when I'm not here, be sure to listen to this spot for Natural Alternatives with great hosts from Eugene Zamperone to Courtney Bozick to John Scardina and Beth Fitteni, sharing cutting-edge information on health, our environment, social justice issues, and so much more. That's every week, Fridays at 6 p.m. For more info on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Take action this holiday season by considering a change in your holiday tradition. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four-legged and multi-legged friends. And finally, remember to enjoy each moment of existence on this beautiful planet that we share. Good night.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.